Good evening and welcome to a one-night stand with the big bands. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to a one-night stand brought to you in part by Moriarty Brothers, 315 Center Street in Manchester, Connecticut's oldest Lincoln Mercury dealer, now in their 28th year of continuing excellence in sales and service. It's most appropriate that Matthew Moriarty and Arnold Dean get together with our guest for this evening, Ray Beller, because Ray and I were first introduced by Matt at a Woody Herman concert that was held at Manchester High School. It must have been all of 5 years ago. At the time, when I met Ray, whom I knew by reputation, of course, I said, we've got to get together and do a show someday. That day has finally arrived, and it's good to have you here.
Thank you.
Ray, you are now the operator of a very successful record store, music store, in Manchester, so you're still close to the music business, and you have been for how much of your life? How old were you when you were first exposed to the musical instruments?
Well, I guess I started playing the saxophone when I was very young, I guess about 9 or 10 years old, and that's my first exposure to the music business.
You've been at it ever since. We won't even ask you how many years that is.
Don't ask me that.
You've played with so many great bands, and we're going to be talking about all of them. But I think perhaps the best example of the way Ray Beller sounded was with this recording that he made with Ray McKinley and the orchestra that was used as a theme song. And what year was this recorded?
This was made about in 1947, I believe, and it was done with some really good men that you probably are interested in knowing. Mundell Lowe, the guitar player, just did the soundtrack for the movie Billy Jack. Louis Stein, the piano player, wrote the commercial, Let Your Fingers Do the Walking.
Oh.
For all those commercials you hear,
yes,
Let Your
sir.
Fingers Do the Walking. Peanuts Hucko, fine clarinet player, led the Glenn Miller band for a few years.
Right.
Peanuts, very fine player. Vernon Friley, I could go on and on. This band was composed of some marvelous young musicians, and later on all did very well for themselves. I think you'll enjoy hearing.
And Ray McKinley is the leader.
This is Ray McKinley saying, how'd you do? And all the boys in the band say, howdy too. So get yourself settled round the radio, because one and all we're set to go. Each lad in the band is gonna play a bit. I'll introduce him by name, to wit. The first indentation on his majestic wax is Mr. Ray Beller and his alto sax. Thank you, Ray Beller, that was plainly hip. I can readily see how you got your rip. Now it's just about time for Mundell Lowe to play his guitar fortissimo. Well, thank you, Mr. Mundy, that was fine indeed. I guess on that point we're all agreed. Now here's Vernon Friley and his slide trombone, Andre Boo, Vernon, and start to moan. Thank you, Mr. Friley, for a nice hunk of swing. Seems like everybody from Kansas City can do that thing. Now seated at the piano is Mr. Louis Stein. Yeah, he can do it too. Mighty fine. Well, thank you, Mr. Lewis. That was first rate. I referred to your performance on the 88. But now it's about time for some tooting from Mr. P. Play it, Mr. Huckle. Play it pretty for me. Peanuts Hucko, that was awfully nice. Boy, you cover that horn like white covers rice. Now the boys in the trumpet section will engage in some highfalutin' tootin' at the back of the stage. Well, so long, everybody. I guess that's enough. We certainly hope you enjoyed our stuff. We'll be back again to play for you. So until the next time, toodaloo.
That was a great number called Howdy Friends, done by Ray McKinley and the orchestra, and we'll continue our conversation with Ray Beller, one of the featured performers on that recording, in just a moment. If you've thought the only way to save on gas is to drive a plain little economy car, Moriarty Brothers of Manchester has a very attractive surprise for you. Their complete line of Mercury Comets. With up to 27 miles per gallon, the Comet is a definite gas saver. But along with good mileage, you get a touch of the big cat with handsome interior designs and a variety of colors. And the tough little Comet also features solid unibody construction with steel side beams in the doors and double-wall deck lid construction. Choose for yourself from two-door or four-door models, with or without air conditioning, with automatic or standard transmission, and choose reliability in service. With Connecticut's oldest Lincoln Mercury dealer, Moriarty Brothers in Manchester. They think you should save all the gas you can, and they know you can do it in style with any one of their 1975 Mercury Comets. Get up to 27 miles per gallon with a 75 Comet at Moriarty Brothers, 315 Center Street in Manchester. Now let's continue talking with Ray Beller. You said that you started, in your preteen years to play alto sax. Was that your first instrument, Ray?
Yes, it was. It was the first experience I had with any kind of musical instrument. And from there, just started playing with little local groups. And finally, I think in high school era years, I think I was with Matty Madison down in Willimantic. And there were some pretty good musicians with that group. We played all around New England. Getting involved with wanting to go into the musical business. And then
About what year was this, so that we can kind of set it in regard to the rest of the big band era?
Well, this is about 37, 38.
Oh, it was a great time to be into it then.
And I got really hung up with Benny Goodman Band and Artie Shaw. Went out to Indiana University and studied music out there till the start of the outbreak of the war.
Being hung up on Artie and Benny, did you kind of get to play clarinet? Did you feel that this was a better solo instrument?
Surprisingly enough, in those days I was playing clarinet. And I was a Artie Shaw devotee in those years and really listened to all his records. I loved the way he played the clarinet.
He had
probably
such
knew all
feeling.
Of his records.
Uh-huh. Such feeling. I think even more, although he was not the technician that Benny Goodman was, I think Artie Shaw offered a little bit more because there was something about the tone and the way he said things on the instrument.
I loved his playing.
Why did you choose the University of Indiana Music School?
They had a great music school, and it was out in the Middle West, and high school that I went to recommended it as being a very fine music school, which it turned out to be.
What was the high school, by the way?
The Wyndham. Mm-hmm. Wyndham High.
Then when you came out of Indiana University, you went on to the big band scene.
Right. I went to New York and tried to get my union card right before the war broke out. I figured I better get a little playing in at that time. And I met some young guys like Marty Napoleon and Tony Fazzo and some kids like, I auditioned for a band called Bob Astor, and Les Elgart was playing lead alto for him. And I took Elgart's place with this Bob Astor band, who incidentally, this particular band is probably the best bunch of musicians that I ever played with, and nobody knew about them. We played all through the Middle West. Shelly Mann was playing drums, Neil Hefti was doing all the arranging, Marty Napoleon playing the piano. It was a marvelous bunch of guys, and it was a gung-ho little group that everybody loved each other, and it was a fine band.
Were both of the Elgarts with it?
No, I took Les's place.
Larry's place. Larry's the saxophone.
Right, and Les stayed with the band for a few, maybe a month after that, and then he dropped out too as the band worked its way out to the Middle West.
From the Bob Astor Orchestra, who did you work with?
From Bob Astor, I took a job with the old Will Bradley, Ray McKinley Band, Beat Me Daddy 8 to the Bar and all that stuff, Celery Stocks Along the Highway.
Uh-huh.
And this is shortly before the war, and And Bradley and McKinley had their differences, and they decided to each go their own way. Ray wanted me to go with him, but I had a certain allegiance, maybe probably mistaken, I don't know, with Bradley, and I liked Will, and I stayed with him. Ray went off and got his own group up, and he got a very fine band going. Now, to take McKinley's place on the Will Bradley band, I got a pal of mine, Shelly Mann, to come in and play the drums.
Too bad you couldn't get somebody with talent, huh?
And Shelly had to sing Celery Talk Song the Highway and Beat Me Daddy Ate to the Bar. And you want to hear something funny? Was Shelly trying to sing those things that Mac was doing? It was a funny scene.
Will Bradley was Glenn Miller's favorite trombonist. His real name was Will Schwichtenberg.
Yeah, fine as I classical understand. Composer, too, under his real name.
Uh-huh. And I want to play another record here before we continue the conversation. Another one that you did with Ray McKinley's orchestra later on called Jiminy Crickets. Tell me something about it.
Okay, this is kind of an easy little thing we use for dancing. We had a library of Eddie Sauter's music, and when McKinley got together with Eddie Sauter had kind of a free rein. Whatever he wanted to do musically was okay with Mac. And consequently, we wound up playing a lot of concert music, which was really not designed for dancing. One of the things which was kind of designed for dancing was this Jiminy Cricket. It's an easy, kind of medium tempo, and kind of nothing little thing, but it's kind of easy to listen to.
Ready, steady.
Oh, that's a fine recording, and that's some of the imaginative work by Eddie Sauter, who made the arrangement for Ray McKinley and the orchestra on a cute little number called Jiminy Crickets. We're talking with Ray Beller, who was featured on that alto saxophone there. Gee, you played awfully well, Ray. Do you still play, by the way?
No, I quit playing.
Hung it up, huh?
Yeah, hung it up.
That's too bad. You and Artie Shaw, I've got to get them back out again one of these days. I'd love to hear. You mentioned the differences that caused the breakup between the McKinley and Will Bradley Orchestra. You know, those joint ownership or joint conductor or leader orchestras just don't seem to work out very well. There was the thing between the Dorsey brothers, of course. They kept breaking up over the years. There's this one. There's the thing between the Algart brothers, who had a great deal of difficulty operating a band together. But what in particular was the breakup between Bradley and McKinley? Was it strictly musical?
No, it wasn't only musical, Arnold. It was a great deal musical, but there was a definite personality clash. McKinley's an outgoing guy from down in big country down there. He's from Texas.
Yes.
He's an outgoing, swinging, raucous kind of a guy. And likes to perform. He wants to dance and sing, and he wants to entertain people. He's that type of guy. He's a sweet, wonderful guy. Bradley's a sweet, wonderful guy, but quiet, introverted, introspective, more hung up on classical compositions, which he is into under his own name. Fine, serious trombone player. It was just a personality clash and a difference of what they thought the public wanted to hear.
Are they friends nowadays, do you believe?
I don't know. I think they're friends, sure. But never did get together musically after that experience.
You went with the Bradley Band, as you mentioned, based on loyalty, which I admire, incidentally. I think it was a good thing to do. As McKinley himself, who was involved with the Dorsey brothers when they broke up, he chose Jimmy because that's the one that he'd been with in the first place. From the Bradley Band, how long did you stay with Will's band?
Well, we stayed, we were on the road with Will, Shelley, and a few of the Arthur Rollini and all these guys, and we were playing with this group out through the Middle West. The war was very imminent at the time, and Will said he had varicose veins in his legs and started to plead his draft board exemption right at that time, decided that the varicose veins were too much for him to stand up and lead a band. So he went back to New York and decided that was the end of his traveling career. So that we all looked for other work. And I took a job with Jerry Wald, who was playing at the old Strand Theater on Broadway in the Lincoln Hotel. And at that time, I was playing a lot of clarinet, too. So I took Jerry Wald's The Supper Hour. I'd play the clarinet parts for Jerry. And we played five shows at the Paramount at the Strand, and then we'd play the dinner hour at the Lincoln, and then we'd do a late thing at the Lincoln. In the morning, we were making movies and stuff for Jimmy Walker at that time. Had that majestic thing where you'd put a dime in the thing and you'd watch the band play at the same time. And I did some stuff with Pete Condoli was in New York then. We did some stuff with Bradley, made some of those movie things where you put a dime in the machine and watch the band play at the same time.
It was a great novel idea at
the
time.
And we had fun around New York until the war was just about breaking out, and Dean Kincaid and I took a train down to Norfolk, Virginia and joined the Navy. And we joined Saxie Dowell down there at the Naval Air Station in Norfolk, Virginia. And we had a fine group down there. We used to play every Friday night, coast to coast, This Is Your Navy.
I remember that show. Yeah. Before we leave the conversation about Jerry Wald, though, I do have to say a word about him. W-A-L-D, Jerry Wald. And I bet there are a great many big band fans listening who are saying, never heard of the guy. But I'll tell you, I heard of him because I was interested in clarinet just about at that period. And if there was somebody I liked almost as well as Artie Shaw, it was Jerry Wald.
Yeah. Jerry went to all his aunts and uncles and raised a lot of money and started his band. He had to have a band, and he had... Well, Ray Sims playing trombone. There were some very nice guys. In fact, Les Robinson was playing lead alto at the time. And I was playing the baritone chair and playing the clarinet things when Jerry was off the stand. I wanted to work with Les. So he spent a great deal of money from his all his relatives, and I think eventually he went down the drain with the whole kit and caboodle.
Now that's too bad because he was a talent, and I know he wanted to sound like Artie Shaw.
Exactly.
In George T. Simon's book, The Big Bands, he says he dressed like him, he tried to talk like him, tried to play like him, too,
right.
Which isn't bad. I tried to play like him, but Jerry Wald came a heck of a lot closer than I did.
Yeah, he played nicely.
So you stayed in the Navy then for the rest of the war?
Yeah, we were in the Navy, and played our way through Norfolk and aboard the aircraft carrier CV-13, the Franklin, and that wound up in some pretty good stuff. And then we came out of the war, and I went back to Willimantic for a week, and then I went into York and checked into Piccadilly, and all of a sudden the stage went up, and I was playing with Betty Goodman at the Paramount Theater.
We'll pick up Ray Beller's career at that point after we listen to a bit more music. This has a very interesting title. It's again done by Ray McKinley's orchestra because with a lot of the bands, unfortunately, you didn't do much recording. You did a lot of playing.
A lot of road work.
A lot of road work, yeah, a lot of those one-night stands. But this is another one with McKinley that you recorded, and it has a most interesting title. It's called Seventh Veil. What can you tell us about it?
Okay, this is an original Eddie Sauter composition, and it features a saxophone. It was written for me, and I think we used to use it primarily for concert dates and playing colleges and stuff, and it was done in a very slow tempo, very moody kind of piece of music. Sometimes we could even use it for dinner hour stuff, but it was an original composition by Sauter, and I think you'll find it musically kind of interesting.
It's called Seventh Veil.
Thank you.
Oh, that's just super. Ray McKinley's orchestra featuring our guest on A One-Night Stand, Ray Beller of Manchester, Connecticut, on alto saxophone. And we'll continue our conversation with Ray in just a moment. This program being brought to you on WTIC in Hartford, Connecticut, in part by Moriarty Brothers, Connecticut's oldest Lincoln Mercury dealer. Every Lincoln Mercury car has its own distinctive characteristics and style, but they all have something in common at Moriarty Brothers. Moriarty Brothers is offering tremendous buys on all of their cars. That means a summer full of savings for you. In addition to Moriarty Brothers' tradition of top trade-in values on your present car, they'll help you save on luxury Lincolns and Grand Marquis, sleek Montegos and beautiful Mercuries, sporty Comets and the new precision-size Monarch. Moriarty Brothers also has some very bright buys on the new Bobcat hatchback and station wagon and the smooth 76 Capri. They're all at Moriarty Brothers in a wide selection of models and colors. For savings and service, visit your friends at Moriarty Brothers, 315 Center Street in Manchester, Connecticut's oldest Lincoln Mercury dealer. Ray, before we talk about Benny Goodman's orchestra, now you've mentioned all of these various bands that you played with, Jerry Wald, Will Bradley, Ray McKinley, Bob Astor, Glenn Gray and the Casa Loma Orchestra, we'll mention a little bit later on, Benny himself. Each of them, they're all people, you know, and they're all very different. And each of them had his own little way of getting things done. Benny's, as I understand it, was to be a tough taskmaster. Did you find that so?
Yes, he was. He's very demanding, very demanding. And he had a certain idea in his head, and he wanted you to play that way. And as long as you did your job and didn't slack down in your chair and stood on the edge of your chair and play and do the job, he was happy with you. But a lot of the guys were very artistic and individuals, and they wanted to do things their way, and that's where the clash came in. Benny had a certain way of hearing things, and he wanted you to do it that way. As long as you did your job, he was very, very nice. But he was very tough on the guys that tried to express their own individuality in the group, and then he would give you the death ray over the top of his glasses, and people got to call that the ray. They when he looked at them like that over the top of the glasses, they knew something was going to happen. And usually they got fired. He was particularly hard on saxophone players. Benny was a frustrated saxophone player, I always thought, because he wanted to play the saxophone. Great clarinet player, wanted to play the saxophone. Artie Shaw was a great saxophone player, wanted to play the clarinet. And in the studios, when they both came into New York, they both played in the studios. And Artie wanted to be a clarinet player. He's a great for a saxophone player. And Benny was a great clarinet player, but he always thought he could play the alto sax. He never had very much success with it.
Who was in the Goodman Band, particularly in the sax section at the time you were there?
Okay, I took Bill Shine's place, and Danny Banks, very fine baritone player. There was a guy named Al Epstein was playing tenor. Clarinet player, that guy playing third alto. I'm trying to think of his name. Well, can't think of his name.
Well, it's a few years ago, isn't it?
I can't think of a very nice young man, but I can't think of his name.
Any others in the band whose names
are familiar to us? The brass section, Tony Fazzo, my friend, was playing lead trumpet by this time. Tony's CBS house band. Maury Feld was playing the drums, Mike Bryan playing guitar, Teddy Wilson. The sextet was just great at this time. It was comprised of Slam Stewart playing bass, Red Norville playing the vibraphone, Teddy Wilson, Red Norville, Slam Stewart, Maury Feld playing drums. That was it. Maury Feld, the drummer. Let's see how many guys did I mention. Well, it was a fine. I think it was probably the best sextet that Benny has ever had at this particular time.
We're going to play Benny Goodman 78 here shortly, where he does a vocal. Got to be this.
Right.
Both sides of a 78.
I made that particular record with him, and Benny sang in this song. I think it's one of the few records that you'll hear the Benny Goodman voice on record.
As a matter of fact, once you hear it, you'll probably realize
why. I say that's enough.
it ain't day, it's night. If you ain't sure, you might. Gotta be this or that. If it ain't dry, it's wet. If you ain't got, you get. If it ain't gross, it's net. Gotta be this or that. If it ain't sis, you can't miss. It's got to be your brother. Can't you see it's got to be one way or the other? If it ain't full, it's blank. If you don't spend, you bank. If it ain't being, it's frank. Gotta be this or that.
That's a cute number. We've played it before. That's both sides of a 78 RPM record. You know, there's so much Benny Goodman being resold now, recut on 33s. I don't think that one has ever been reissued.
There's not too many records of it. This belongs to a young man in Manchester called Bob Wasserman, who loaned it to me for the occasion.
Some great performances.
Right, Red Norvo, Slam Stewart. I remember making it. It was a lot of fun doing it. It sounds like it on the record.
Slam Stewart had that unique style of bowing the bass and humming along with
singing
it.
Singing along with it.
And I could hear your voice there in the exchanges with the band. Sure. And how did Norvo make that distinctive sound?
Norvo put a couple of huge, almost like boxing gloves at the end of his mallets. And I remember playing with him at the Paramount in this particular record. He'd stand out there and just wail away the vibraphone like it's going to destroy the thing. And the audience would break up. And that's where you heard Benny's voice saying, "Get it, Red, get it."
How many shows a day?
Well, we played 5 or 6 shows a day at the Paramount.
What was your favorite? Did you like one-night stands? Did you like the recording dates? Did you like playing for dances?
I think when you're young, you like it all, as long as you're playing. After you get a little older, you don't care for any of it.
None of that.
No, too much traveling.
You want to sit still for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, nice to play a hotel or a restaurant spot where you're in for 4 or 5 weeks.
It would seem that the theater jobs would have been the most difficult of all because you're talking about, say, 6 shows a day separated by 2.5 hours of film and previews and a cartoon and so on.
And very boring, incidentally.
Yeah,
right?
once you've seen the film.
You play the same music here for 5 or 6 shows. After a while, you get to hate it, you know, and it gets pretty boring.
And by about the 4th day, I imagine you're all fit to be tied.
Yeah, and usually if you don't have a couple little drinkies or something like that to help you along about the 5th or 6th show, there's no real excitement in the music, and you got to create it yourself.
Yeah, you can see why it was important for the musicians to leave the theater for that little 2-hour break while the film was on. They had to get away
from
it.
Had to get away from it for a while.
Did you play your theater engagements mostly in New York?
Yeah, I did. As a matter of fact, I played the Paramount many times. I played it with Benny, I played it with Glenn Gray, and I played it with McKinley's band. And those days, the Strand Theater had big bands, and I played there. And the Capitol Theater used to have bands on Broadway. And all the bands would go in there for 4, 5, 6 week stay. So between these 3 major theater houses in New York, it created a great deal of work for musicians. And then from the Paramount engagement with Benny, then we went to a club on 5th Avenue called the 500 Club. It was downstairs on 5th Avenue. We stayed there for about 6 or 8 weeks. And then Benny had to go into the Mayo Clinic, have his back looked upon or something. Mm-hmm. What was wrong with his sciatic nerve. And at this point, I decided that Glenn Gray was after me to join him, and at a great deal more money, and just being out of the Navy, that security looked pretty darn good. And Bobby Hackett was with the band. And I decided to go out to the West Coast with Glenn Gray, and we gradually worked our way out there and played all around the Army bases in the Southwest, flying back and forth. Ralph Muzzillo, Fats Daniels from Springfield was playing third chair and playing a lot of clarinet and singing. It was a nice band. It wasn't as good as Benny's musically, but the money was really good. We played Hollywood for a couple of months, San Diego, San Francisco, did the whole tour.
Until
I got the call from McKinley that he had ideas of starting this new band with Peanuts and Louis Stein and Mundell Lowe, and he had some great guys, and he said, "Let's get together and do something musically." So I left Glenn Gray someplace out in the Middle West and flew back to Long Island and started rehearsing with McKinley.
We'll pick it up there again shortly. I want to play another record you made with Goodman. Incidentally, you mentioned him going to the Mayo Clinic because he was having trouble with his back. It was right after he came out of there that he did a group number. I think it was the Octet. Did Slipped Disc.
Slipped Disc, right.
That's right, yes. Which was tied in with his back problem. Benny Goodman had a number that you were featured on very frequently called Clarinade. Tell us about it, Ray.
Well, it was really written for the clarinet, and there's very little saxophone part, but the background of the record is interesting. It was written by Mel Powell, who teaches music or taught music down at Yale. I don't know whether he's still there or not. Mel wrote this thing. It's supposed to be like a kitten playing with a ball of yarn. It's written in 6 sharps for a saxophone. I guess that puts the clarinet in. What does it put it in, Gerhardt? Five sharps, okay. Five sharps for the clarinet. It's a really difficult piece of music.
Anything beyond a key of C or something this difficult should be illegal, you realize.
It is definitely the most clarinet player. Anyway, we went into the studios. I joined the band taking Bill Shine's place. Benny had gone into the studio, recorded clarinet with Bill Shine playing lead alto. I joined the band, and a week later, Benny decided that he wasn't happy with the original performance. Had to go back in and do it again, being the perfectionist that he was. We went back to Liedekranz Hall for Columbia Records and spent the whole day moving the band from one studio to another, and finally he got a record that he found acceptable. So there's two different versions of Clarinet out. The first one he did was when he used his tongue too much on it. He was that style. Wasn't very happy with that. And on the latter recording, he kind of makes it a little more running together, the notes, without being articulated on each note. And he was quite pleased with the second version. And so you'll hear two different versions of Clarinet in your travels. The one that I made is available. I know a guy in Connecticut that has a copy of it, but there's not too many of them around. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we'll have the right one for you one of these times.
Let's hear what Clarinet sounds like. That's a fantastic recording of Clarinet, made popular by Benny Goodman and his orchestra, one featuring Bill Shine, the other featuring our guest, Ray Beller. Ray, you played with so many bands over the years. As you think back, with some affection, I'm sure, on all those years, do you have a favorite period of time with any of the big bands?
I loved playing with Benny's band. It was very, very professional, and it was real saxophone playing. It was soft, and the parts were really nicely balanced. The Bob Astor band, when I was very young, was exciting. The Eddie's music with McKinley was almost pedantic in nature. He was trying very hard to do things that were novel musically and interesting and excitingly new, but it became kind of almost scholastic in approach rather than being a real swing style thing, and you were up on the edge of your chair all night. You were reading parts that were extremely difficult. The music was, it was entering a new period when guys were trying new things. Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie were on the scene. There was a revolution in music that was getting away from the just purely swing aspect of the thing with the it more into the intellectual, and that's where Eddie came in. It was exciting to play, but really difficult, sitting there all night reading those hard parts, as you'll see in this next recording.
We are going to play one that George T. Simon says was one of the greatest of all time by any band, and that is some praise from him. We'll present it here in just a moment. If you've thought the only way to save on gas is to drive a plain little economy car, Moriarty Brothers of Manchester has a very attractive surprise for you. Their complete line of Mercury Comets. With up to 27 miles per gallon, the Comet is a definite gas saver. But along with good mileage, you get a touch of the big cat with handsome interior designs and a variety of colors. And the tough little Comet also features solid unibody construction with steel side beams in the doors and double-walled deck lid construction. Choose for yourself from two-door or four-door models, with or without air conditioning, with automatic or standard transmission, and choose reliability in service. With Connecticut's oldest Lincoln Mercury dealer, Moriarty Brothers in Manchester. They think you should save all the gas you can, and they know you can do it in style with any one of their 1975 Mercury Comets. Get up to 27 miles per gallon with a 75 Comet at Moriarty Brothers, 315 Center Street in Manchester. What prompted George Simon to say those good things about Hangover Square, Ray?
Well, this was a new group. We were playing at the Commodore Hotel in New York. We had some exciting young musicians. It's like comparing Benny Goodman to Mozart and Eddie's music. This music we're going to listen to Shostakovich, we'll say. Mm. Benny, everything was, every note meant something like Mozart. Every note was perfect. The harmonies were not that too difficult for people to listen to. The time was a jazz time. It went along in the rhythmic sequence that we're all used to. With Eddie, the harmonies were a little jarring. He would change from 2-4 to 3-4 to 4-4 to 5-4 to... it was just a new way of presenting jazz music, and it was almost like a... not for dancing. It was designed primarily, I think, for listening. And sometimes we'd try to play this stuff, and people would almost try to dance to it. And it became really strange to watch them stumbling over each other out on the floor.
Stan Kenton warns people, don't try to dance to my music, you might hurt yourself.
So this is the era that we're going into with Eddie's music. He was trying to do something musically different and novel and interesting.
I'm anxious to hear it. It's called Hangover Square.
Thank you.
And there it is, done by Ray McKinley's orchestra. It's called Hangover Square. I guess that was imaginative work by Eddie Sauter. It really kept you on your toes,
it
right?
It does. It's
particularly
hard to
play for a lead man. Ray McKinley once told me he's never heard a better lead saxophone player than Ray Beller.
Well, that was nice of him. That was nice of him.
And after listening
he's
to you.
He's a nice man.
After listening to you on these records, I can only agree. You know, our time has gone all too quickly, Ray.
Oh,
we'll hear a little bit of Borderline by Ray McKinley to wrap it all up. Thank you so much for joining us after all these years, and I hope you'll visit us again.
You know, I enjoyed it. I didn't know if I was going to or not, but it was nice and easy.
Our wrap-up is going to be nice and difficult, though, because it's another of those Eddie Sauter arrangements for Ray McKinley and the orchestra. This is called Borderline. Our program featuring Manchester's Ray Beller has been brought to you in part by Moriarty Brothers, 315 Center Street in Manchester, Connecticut's oldest Lincoln Mercury dealer, now in their 28th year of continuing excellence in sales and service. This is Arnold Dean. Thank you for joining us on a one-night stand with the big bands on WTIC Radio. We'll see you again in about a month.